It's winter time outside now. I'm sure that's not any news to you, but it is winter time, and winter time brings about certain things that we think about. We have short days. The daylight hours are shortened. This is a problem, more of a problem for some people than it is for others. Hazel is very affected by the lack of light. It doesn't bother me one way or the other, I guess. You know, there's an advantage to not being able to see all that well. But there are short days, there are cold temperatures, there's ice and snow. Here in Estonia, for those of you who may have an interest in knowing, the ice on the streets starts to build up. Now, it hasn't built up so much yet this year. There are spots of ice on the sidewalks everywhere. And here the sidewalks don't get cleared away as they do in the United States. And so they can become very slippery. A couple of years ago, there was good, at least an inch thick sheet of ice on all of the sidewalks. And very slippery. I fell a couple of times on that ice. Well, it's not that thick yet, and so we had a little bit of snow this past week, and if we can get some snow on top of the ice, unless it starts to melt, then it gives you some additional traction. But there are cold temperatures, there are ice and snow. I suppose it's a good time for Jackson and Mason to build snowmen. They built a snowman just before I left, and it was really quite a nice snowman. I think it was probably their supreme creation as far as doing something which is creative is concerned. Obviously, they had a little bit of help, but the snowman, I didn't see him firsthand, but pictures were brought to me of that snowman, complete with the fact that there was a blue fluid that had been sprayed on parts of him to outline certain features. So ice and snow may be okay for some people and in certain circumstances, provided you can come and go in and out of it. But in general, winter is not a time where you would like to be out all of the time. To the point, being a soldier under these conditions would not be a pleasant task. And I'll make a spiritual comparison to that, the cold winter, physically speaking, with a spiritual time that is also rather a bad time through the winter. After the Feast of Tabernacles, there are about 5 months until the coming of the spring holy days. It's a time, you might say, in a similar way, which is an uncomfortable and cold time spiritually. You go through Christmas and New Year's, and perhaps this is the most unpleasant time for Christians. I'm going to be quoting in this sermon an American hero by the name of Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine referred to, and this is the reason for the introduction having to do with winter, he referred to summer soldiers. Summer soldiers. And we're not to be summer soldiers. I'll get more into that as we get into the sermon. But let's say, for right now, we could quote a scripture from Jesus Christ, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 3. This is, I'm sorry, from Paul to Timothy, not from Jesus Christ. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 3. Paul writes to Timothy, "Endure hardship. You endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ." physical soldiers that we'll be looking at had to endure hardship. They did it, and as a result, their mission was successful. Spiritually speaking, you and I have to as well endure hardship. Verse 4 of the same chapter, no man that wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier. So Paul is making the comparison there between soldiers in the world. Roman soldiers would have been the most common at that time. And Roman soldiers were famous for enduring hardship, not probably as famous as Spartans. Greek city-state of Sparta, the individuals who were there were known for enduring hardship. They were Spartans. And so Paul is saying to Timothy that as a part of our calling, we're going to find it necessary to endure hardship just like those soldiers did. No man that wars, that is if you're a soldier, you're warring, and you are a soldier and you are warring, if you're a member of God's true church, no man that wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life so that he can please him who has chosen him to be a soldier. Some are soldiers, by contrast, are those who will dedicate themselves when the times are easy. Not when the times are hard. Summer soldiers are willing to be soldiers when the times are easy. But when the winter comes, the time is not easy. Summer soldiers are not willing to be soldiers during the winter months. And that's the title of this sermon, Summer Soldiers. I'd like to interject a qualifier here. Not advocating war. I'm not aggrandizing revolution or the American Revolution or any such thing. Just making a comparison. And I want to use words of inspiration written by Thomas Paine and show how we can ask ourselves some questions based on these words. Here's the specific purpose statement. Examine yourself. Let us examine ourselves. What kind of soldiers are we? There was a publication written by a man by the name of Thomas Paine. I have more to say about him. The publication was a series of articles written by Thomas Paine between 1776 and 1783 during the American Revolution. A little bit of information about Thomas Paine. He was a native born to the United States. In fact, he was a Johnny-come-lately, we might say, to the United States at just about the time that the American Revolution was starting. He came from Britain, landing in Philadelphia on November the 30th, 1774. His life, essentially, in Britain had been a failure. Things had not gone well for him occupationally, economically, or in many ways. He had been an author of some little renown. Nothing had really gone well for him. His wife and his child both died in childbirth. He's remembered as, Thomas Paine is remembered as an inventor, although I don't know of anything that he invented. Nevertheless, the information that you can find on him says that he was an inventor, although we don't know of what. He was also a philosopher, and most importantly for what we're talking about in this sermon, he was an author. And he is renowned as an inspirational writer. 141 days after Thomas Paine stepped off of the boat in Philadelphia, the Battle of Lexington and Concord occurred. April 19th, as you remember from Wadsworth, the 19th of April in 75, hardly a man is yet alive who remembers that fateful day, and so on and so on. It is the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. Well, he'd been in the United States 141 days, about 3.5 months. But somehow, even in that short time, he got really involved in believing in the American cause. And it might be written about Thomas Paine. I have seen it written about him, that the pen is mightier than the sword. That's a phrase that comes from a play that was written years later, 1839. The play is written by, the play is entitled Richelieu or the Conspiracy. The play was about Cardinal Richelieu. And was written by H.A. Ogden. And this is the quotation. True this. Beneath the rule of men, entirely great, the pen is mightier than the sword. Behold, the arch enemy's wand. Itself, it's nothing. But taking sorcery from the hand, from the master's hand, to paralyze Caesars and to strike the loud earth breathless, take away the sword. States can be saved without it. And so, that rhetoric has been encapsulated by the sentence that the pen is mightier than the sword. Well, Thomas Paine set about 1775 to write inspirational literature to inspire people of the American Revolution to action. His first publication was Common Sense. It was entitled Common Sense. It went on sale on January 10th, 1776. The Continental Congress had already been meeting. And if you know something of that history, it seemed like the initial meetings were endless before they were finally able to come up with the Declaration of Independence. People such as Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Ben Franklin were intimately involved in the creation of the Declaration of Independence. Continental Congress was already holding meetings. By the time, and Thomas Paine is given a lot of credit for the success of the writing of the Declaration of Independence, or not for the writing of it, but for the adopting of the Declaration of Independence because of the pamphlet he wrote, which was entitled Common Sense. Went on sale January 10, 1776, and by the time the Declaration of Independence was signed in July of 1776, that's a little over 6 months, half a million copies had been sold. Now, we may not think that's so impressive today, although to me it would be even in today's country pretty impressive to see a half million copies of a booklet sold. But yet, when it was half a million copies in that day and age and time, you have to put crank into your understanding, number one, transportation and distribution, the difficulty in printing, the size of the population. I don't know what the size of the population was, but when half a million copies had been sold, and you wouldn't surmise at that time that a copy went to one person. Today, each person gets their own copy of various things. But these get passed around in those times. And so the booklet Common Sense went on sale in January of 1776. By July the 4th, half a million copies had been sold. Thomas Paine became known primarily as a result of this pamphlet, Common Sense, as the soul and spirit of the American Revolution. Later on, Thomas Paine undertakes to write during the Revolution a series of articles which are called The Crisis. He writes them under the pen name Common Sense, although he wasn't obscuring his identity by doing that. He just liked to use the pen name Common Sense. The very first one of these was published December 19th by Thomas Paine. December 23rd, you may find this date stir something in your mind. December 23rd, General Washington had the pamphlet read to his troops at Valley Forge. Situation at Valley Forge was regarded as pretty desperate. You see, the summer soldiers had all gone home. The Sunshine Patriots had by and large abandoned the troops of General George Washington. The men who were there at Valley Forge didn't have shoes. They were barefooted. I don't know exactly what the circumstances were that they had no shoes. I know that shoes were probably quite expensive in those days. And I remember, even when I was growing up, going to school, we didn't typically wear shoes. Not that my parents couldn't afford shoes. They could, and they provided them for me, but it wasn't a very good thing if you wore shoes to school and nobody else did. So I didn't. But the men of General George Washington didn't have shoes. And it wasn't like living in Georgia where I was going to school without shoes. This was in the confines of the area around Philadelphia, Valley Forge. There was ice and snow, and the reports that are written are that there was blood in the snow from the feet of the men who were there. Summer soldiers had gone home. Sunshine Patriots hadn't sacrificed to be able to send boots and shoes to the men who were still remaining there in the army. Sunshine soldiers. Summer soldiers and sunshine patriots. Those are the few remaining ones to whom George Washington had this first pamphlet of Thomas Paine's read. It was very inspirational. And today, it's very renowned as having played a very important part in inspiring those troops in the American Revolution. Here's the way this first issue of a series of articles, there was a series of them, but this is the first one, entitled The Crisis. In this article, Thomas Paine writes, "These are the times which try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. He that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman." And I guess this is something I can relate to in relationship to God's church. Because while we're not out in the snow, we're in a period of long ongoing difficulties in the church. In fact, they have been going on now for 2,000 years. And while we may not have bloody feet, because we don't have shoes, nevertheless, the sacrifices have been extreme from time to time. "Tyranny, like hell," he writes, "is not easily conquered." I guess we could say that evil, like death, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us. The heart of the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a price on its goods, and it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article, he writes, as freedom, I would exchange for that eternal life, so celestial an article as eternal life, should not be highly rated. And so this is the way the pamphlet begins, or the article begins. It lasts 4 pages of a single type. It's very inspiring. And it's interesting that George Washington had that read to the troops on December 23rd. Because if you remember, it was December the 24th, 1776, that Washington led his troops across the Delaware and attacked the British at Trenton on New Year's Eve. And because the British were involved in a big Christmas party, they were routed and severe damage was inflicted upon them by the American army. Thomas Paine had a part in that. Inspiration And the notion that was put among those troops that they were the real soldiers. They were not the summer soldiers. And that while there weren't too many sunshine, too many real patriots either, The ones that were supporting them were the true patriots and not the sunshine patriots. Here's the situation. The Continental Army, the soldiers in the Continental Army, the majority of them would come and to fight in the spring after the planting was done. And they would stay until it was time for the harvest, and then they would go home. Others might not go home for the harvest. Some of these summer soldiers might not go home for the harvest. They might stay through the harvest. But as soon as cold weather came, those members of the summer soldiers would go home. And of course, they might or might not return the next summer. So those were the summer soldiers. The Sunshine Patriots were those who supported the effort whenever things were going well. Whenever it looked like, well, we may succeed at this, we may win, but if I'm going to make some financial contribution, if I'm going to support the troops in some other way, would I support a loser? I only will support a winner, of course. Those were the Sunshine Patriots. And so, when Thomas Paine says, these are the times that try men's souls, the summer soldier and the Sunshine Patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. He that stands by it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. I had a rather interesting, maybe comparative example in the last week of summer soldiers or sunshine patriots in regard to football fans. The Falcons, we watched the Falcons game. I watched it here on Slingbox. And as the game proceeded, and the last part of the very last part of the game, the opponents, the Seattle Seahawks, scored the go-ahead points on a touchdown. And it was so late in the game, there were 30 seconds left, and the Falcons had already used all of their timeouts. So it was easy at that point, I guess, for many people to be summer soldiers or sunshine patriots to give up and to go home. But lo and behold, in three plays, surprisingly, remarkably, the Falcons moved down the field and in the last 3 seconds of the game kicked a field goal and won the game. Brian's neighbors had gone to the game. Feeling it was impossible for the Falcons to win with 30 seconds left, they left the stadium. In the parking lot, as they were getting to their car, they heard a big roar go up in the stadium. Now they didn't know what might have happened. And so they called and Brian's phone rang in New York. And he had to tell them what had happened in the game. So I guess we might say, in a sense, that's an example of summer soldiers or sunshine patriots, in a small way, but nevertheless, the principle is the same. What's the point in this? We need to be like summer soldiers. We need to be different from the summer soldiers. We need to be the true patriots when it comes to God's church. We're coming up now in 2 months on time for the observance of God's Passover Day. And we need to examine ourselves. I'm not inferring that any of you are summer soldiers or sunshine patriots. You're mostly battle-tested, hardened regulars, but it still behooves us not to be complacent. March 24th is the Passover Day. Reading from Leviticus 23, verses 4, 5, and 6. Leviticus 23 is where we find all of God's holy days, His holy occasions, from the weekly Sabbath to the individual holy days, spelled out, and they're all called Sabbath days. Every one of these occasions are called Sabbath days in Leviticus 23. These, it says in verse 4, are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. The 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover. The 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread unto the Lord. 7 days must you eat unleavened bread. If you're not familiar with it, the Passover day is the day on which Jesus Christ was crucified. Very clear in the Bible that it was the Passover day that he was crucified. He was the Passover lamb. He observed the Passover, and he commanded his disciples to do the same, which they did for 100 years after his death, before transforming the Passover day into Easter. And so that's the time. These are the feasts. They are holy convocations, and they are to be proclaimed in their season. The first of them is the 14th day of the first month, which will be March 24th, the Passover day. We are to, in preparation for the Passover day, which we are to keep, we are to examine ourselves. Here Paul is writing in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, and he's writing in the context of keeping the Passover day. He says, examine yourselves, whether you be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Don't you know your own selves how that Jesus Christ is in you, except you be reprobates? So we are to examine ourselves. And every year as we come to the Passover day, the instruction in the Bible is we reestablish the process of examination in our lives. We need to start that now. We don't need to, it's not good for us to wait until the week before and then start to examine ourselves. We need to be examining ourselves from a distance. And we have a period of time now, 2 months approximately between now and the Passover, when we can use the time profitably to begin to examine ourselves. In the context of what I have said, there's a particular kind of examination which I'm talking about in this sermon. I expect I'll give at least one other sermon talking about some other type or some other level of examination which you also might want to do. But by the time you come to the days of unleavened bread, you are to have removed the leaven, that is to take sin out of your life. You can't perfectly do that, but you can work on doing it between now and then. Examine yourselves, whether you be in the faith. What kind of examination am I talking about here? The level of commitment which we have. Are we summer soldiers? Are we sunshine patriots? And as I said, I know for the most part you're battle-hardened regulars, but still, as we go through a year, time can occur and erode us, and we need to renew the level of commitment that we have in our lives. So the process of examination is not examination for examination's sake. The process of examination is examination for the purpose of repenting and changing where we find that we are wanting in something. And there's always room, I would surmise, for us to intensify and to increase the level of commitment we have toward God's way, so that we're not some summer soldiers and sunshine patriots. Examine ourselves. Here's a shining example. It's good to look at shining examples and to ask ourselves, how would I do if I had this problem set before me? You don't know what problem you may have set before you, as these young men here did not know. But here's how they responded. Daniel chapter 3 and verse 12. Nebuchadnezzar had set up an idol, and he had commanded that everybody would bow down to this idol when the trumpet was sounded. But everybody didn't. Most everybody did. Most everybody were summer soldiers and sunshine patriots. When the going was easy, they did the spiritual things, perhaps. There were lots of Jews in Babylon. And yet we only find it's recorded that three of them were brought before Nebuchadnezzar because they would not bow down to the idol. Well, these three were not sunshine patriots or summer soldiers. Well, the administrative officials there in the kingdom of Babylon came to Nebuchadnezzar and said, there are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded you. They serve not your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up. Nebuchadnezzar wasn't pleased to hear this. And so Nebuchadnezzar had Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego brought before him and demanded to know if they were going to bow down. In fact, he said, I'm going to sound the trumpet, and either you bow down now, or else, he didn't ask them if they would. He said, either you demonstrate that you will, or you're going into fiery furnace. It's all on the line now. Would they be summer soldiers and sunshine patriots, or would they be true to the truth of their God? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we're not careful, it says here, to answer you in this matter. We're not careful. I don't know if that's probably the best translation of the phrase. But anyway, they said that's the way it's translated in King James. We are not careful to answer you in this matter. And we aren't going to be concerned. We'll just tell you what we're going to do. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, he will deliver us out of your hand, O King. But if not, be it known unto you, O King, that we will not serve your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up. They weren't summer soldiers. They weren't sunshine patriots. And so what about us? What's our level of commitment? What's our level of dedication? It's very, very, very unlikely that we will ever face this kind of a situation. Nevertheless, it should be certainly just as true of us that we have the level of dedication toward God and His will. Examine ourselves. We need to examine ourselves and see if we have that level of dedication. Are we summer soldiers? Are we sunshine patriots? Or are we willing to make the sacrifice, no matter what it may be, of the things that are required? Hebrews chapter 11, verses 35 through 39. Paul writes in Hebrews 11 about a large litany of people who were faithful until death. They're martyrs. And yet he said that there would be others as well. Chapter 11, verse 35. Women received their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Indication here is the ones he's talking about could have received deliverance, could have escaped the torture if they had made the proper sacrifice. Summer soldiers, sunshine patriots, or faithful believers true to God. Others, verse 36, had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder. I believe that probably refers to Isaiah, that they sawed him in half while he was alive. Were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. All these, having obtained a good report through faith, did not receive the promise. You see, the soldiers at Valley Forge didn't have shoes. They walked in the snow in their bare feet. There was blood in the snow. They endured the cold. They endured those hardships so that they could bring about a new nation. You're being called upon to endure a hardship so that you may be part of bringing about God's kingdom here on the face of the earth. They had a small purpose for what they were doing. You have a gigantic purpose. It's beyond imagination. And it's really hard to comprehend and believe that it's even a possibility sometimes. And yet we know it is. We have an enormous potential purpose for what we are doing. But we can't be summer soldiers. We can't be sunshine patriots. We have to be those dedicated, faithful believers. Like these in Hebrews chapter 11, they have obtained a good report through faith. we likewise need to do the same. And yes, this is a remote possibility, but we don't know what the future holds. And regardless as to whether we have to face that situation or not, God knows our heart and knows whether or not we would be willing to make that sacrifice, even though we may not have to make it. Needs to be in our heart that we have the level of commitment and dedication that we would be willing to make that sacrifice. Hazel has a cousin she'll be visiting, I guess. Barney. Barney's a helicopter pilot, or was. Barney flew 2 tours in Korea, and then, I believe, 3 tours in Vietnam. Talking to Barney, he gave me a definition of flying, which I hadn't heard before, but I thought it was very interesting because it was his career. He said flying is minutes and hours and days and weeks and months and even years of absolute boredom, interrupted by occasional moments of stark terror. Like Barney, we have an enemy. You know, he was flying the helicopters. North Koreans, Chinese were trying to blow him out of the air. The Vietnamese, the Viet Cong, and North Vietnamese, and probably Cambodians as well, were trying to blow him out of the air. And not very many helicopter pilots made it back. Especially not after the number of tours that Barney did. So Barney had an enemy, but we have an enemy too. And our enemy is even a lot more capable of destroying us than was the enemy that Barney was facing. Peter writes about it in this way. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. Be sober. That's an instruction. Be vigilant. Your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. Resist steadfastly in the faith. It's an instruction of what to do about it. Resist him steadfastly in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. What's your level of dedication? Examine yourself. Look at that. In the next while, try to find places where you need to be working to improve your personal level of commitment and dedication to God's truth. Book of Revelation characterizes our enemy a little bit differently. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9, I think, is one of the great descriptions that we see of Satan the devil, because it really gives us information. And we saw Peter says he goes about as a roaring lion seeking whom he can devour. That gives us one picture. But Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9 gives us a different picture. It says there the great dragon, talking about Satan, was cast out. We'll go into that context. That old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out to the earth. His angels were cast out with him. Now the characterization of Satan the devil there is as a being which deceives the whole world. He counterfeits everything of God and uses his counterfeits to deceive all of mankind. Paul says he's the God of this world, and there's no doubt he is. And so, that's our enemy. And you get, on the one hand, you've got him pictured as a roaring lion. On the other hand, a quiet deceiver. And which one is true? They're not mutually exclusive, are they? At one time, he behaves as a roaring lion, and at other times, and most of the time, behaves as a being who deceives all of mankind. And so we have to be careful. We have to be careful. And if we think our level of commitment is what it ought to be, then we need to examine ourselves. Because none of us have the level of commitment that we should have. Like Barney, your life and my life will consist of periods that seem endlessly boring, but they will be interrupted by periods and times of occasional crisis. Preparation through regular periods of self-examination will be the difference in how we are able to survive the Christian crisis. Now, Thomas Paine wrote about the crisis. Well, there is a crisis. Our crisis is not the same crisis as the one he wrote about, but some of the principles are the same. It is a Christian crisis, I would characterize it. We need to be examining ourselves, and the great examination is, what is our level of commitment? That's a central point of examination, because if we can establish the centrality of commitment, then everything else will spring from that. These are the times which try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of their God and their church. He that stands by it now deserves the thanks of man and woman. Evil is not easily conquered, yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven alone knows how to put a proper price upon its goods. And it would be very strange indeed if such a celestial article as eternal salvation should not be highly valued. Let us examine ourselves for the level of commitment that is required. You endure hardness, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 3. You determined that you will always endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ.